Paralympic champion, world champion, European champion and Commonwealth champion. T38 sprinter Sophie Hahn has arguably achieved it all. A reminder, she's still just 24. The world record holder burst onto the scene after being inspired by the 2012 Paralympic Games, and she hasn't stopped there. Her level of success has earned her huge admirers, and she's quickly become one of the biggest role models and most impressive athletes in British sport. But this is someone who keeps driving for more. She may be the first female track and field athlete to hold gold medals in the same event, from the World Championships, the Paralympics, the Europeans and the Commonwealth, that's the Grand Slam, but this is someone who is still striving to keep winning and keep those medals coming in. Now, our conversation took place a couple of days before it was confirmed there would be no overseas fans coming to Tokyo 2020, so there's a couple of questions that are a tad out of date. But with home fans or no fans, you can bet that Sophie Hahn is determined to retain her Paralympic gold at all costs. Sophie, welcome to the show. Great to have you on the podcast. How is everything going at the moment in the midst of lockdown still?
Everything's going good, thank you. Obviously, it's a very strange time for everyone, but I just take it day by day, and I'm very lucky. I can still be able to train 5 days a week at Loughborough University, so I'm very grateful for that.
Definitely. And I mean, how is this period with lockdown? Obviously, you'll say you're still thankfully lucky to train at Loughborough, like a lot of the athletes that we've been talking to have been lucky enough to still have that training right now. But in terms of the disruption, we were talking just before we started recording, it's nearly a year since the first lockdown came in. But how have you managed all that time with dealing with the extra restrictions, dealing with all these extra protocols, and trying to fit your training in around that?
So at the start, the first lockdown, obviously we weren't allowed to train at the High Park, so we didn't know whether we were able to compete. Luckily, I did have the British champs, which I'm very grateful for, but there were some days where my motivation wasn't as high as I hoped, and I did find it hard a couple of times, but then I think you've got great friends and family to support you and encourage you. Yes, you can still take it day by day, and you can still train and still have that motivation at the end, which was were the British champs in September, which was my first and only race, but I was very grateful for a competition.
In terms of finding that motivation, did having that championship sort of earmarked in the calendar help push you on those days where the motivation wasn't quite there?
Yeah, 100%. So when lockdown did ease a bit, we were allowed to go back at the track, I think. We're allowed to go outside, which is a great start, because obviously you get to meet up with your coach, other training members, which did help. And then we took it day by day, week by week, gradually increased the training in the gym, and then we had that goal end, which was the British champs in September in Manchester.
I think getting to go outside as well is a big big part of it. I can probably speak on behalf of most of the country right now where I say I'm quite fed up of being in this room and working solidly in this room all the time. But does that make a big difference for you, is getting to actually physically go outside and do something for a change?
I think it does help. Like, when I wasn't training in the first lockdown, I love walking my dogs. I've got 3 dogs, so I literally went out for a walk every day, which definitely helped getting some fresh air, being outside in general, not just being stuck in the house all day.
Comparing that first one to the one we're currently in, which came in what, January, feels like a lifetime ago. Did the experience of the first one help you manage this one, or did you find it a little bit different or a little more difficult this time around?
I think this time around, it's still very difficult, but we're very lucky that we still going to training every day, because when we were originally locked down in January, we were still able to train. So I did manage to get a really good winter training behind me. Like, I managed to go in the gym pretty much every day. I managed to not miss any training sessions. Obviously, and then Christmas happened, and then we sort of like gradually built it up from there and going into the season.
This time around, how have you stayed motivated? We'll talk about sort of Tokyo and things like that, but I imagine that's a big part of it, is that driving you onwards with that as your target, sort of thing.
Yeah, 100%. I think Tokyo's obviously a big year, not just for myself, but for everyone. But we do have sort of local competitions in the UK, which I will be aiming for. And I think we've got the European Champs in June, so that'll be the next sort of motivation. And then obviously Tokyo in August with the Paralympic Games.
With regards to your training regime at the moment as well, and you talked about the various protocols that you do have to abide by now with temperature checks and so on, but what's the regime actually like versus time you get to spend outdoors versus indoors, and trying to fit that around what we can and can't do right now?
So we'd basically, the night before our training session, we have to take a temperature, we have to fill out a form, and then when we arrive on the training facility, we have to take a temperature again. And obviously you go and sit down and do your stretching, and then obviously keep social distancing. And then we normally go and jog outside, and then that's when the training begins. We all have to be like social distance. So you feel, you do feel very safe, and you just got to continue and just be careful, really.
Daily life as well, away from sport, because I think it's so many of us fall into the trap of, I suppose, when we talk to an athlete, making it all about sport, but everyone has their own lives outside of sport as well. And whether that's been a challenge at all, trying to almost have that balance with your personal life as well as the sporting life, when so many things that we tend to do in our personal lives, we can't right now in the same way. There's still a lot of video calls and video chats, and I'm sure the odd Zoom quiz here and there, but going out for a walk with a friend isn't quite as easy now to do as it was before.
I think for me, because we live in the countryside, we've got loads of fields, so I do sort of take my dogs out for a walk quite a few times with my mum. But I'm also very lucky because I study at Loughborough College, so I've got that college life as well as the athlete life, which is really good. So I study Level 3 BTECs, sport and leisure. So that sort of keeps going, it's that 50-50 balance.
In terms of the studies then as well, has that been... I want to say fun, kind of juggling it all, but sometimes stressful, I suppose, at the same time?
So Loughborough College are very supportive. So I do it mostly online, so I'm a distance learner. So maybe, let's say, every Friday I go into college, because obviously COVID, it's very hard sort of going at the moment. So they're trying to sort of reduce your chances, but they're online, so it does help. So I can do it in my own time. There's no set date, so it works out really well.
Definitely. Looking ahead then to Tokyo 2020 or 2021, whichever way you want to call it, how's it been preparing for something like that when we know it's probably most likely to happen, but its final form, we're still very much, in doubt over whether there's going to be fans. I think we're pretty all convinced it's going to look very different to any other Olympics that we've had and Paralympics before. Does that ever play on your mind, or is it something athletes think about, or is it just very much trying to make it as much about the performance and control what you can control right now?
I think for me, I take it day by day. Obviously you can't control the controllable. You just have to focus on the event. If the crowds, it's been amazing, but if not, then you just got to focus on your performance, and it's obviously going to be very different and strange games for everyone. But if it goes ahead, that I'd be very grateful, and I think it would be an amazing games, but be very different games.
What kind of things do you need to take into account when you think of performance? Kind of for an example, and to put this on a far lower scale than anything up at Paralympic scale, and I think back to when I fenced, and there are always competitions that I felt more comfortable at just because I prefer the environment, or knew that some of the people there I got on with quite well. And I always felt like I performed better at those competitions than maybe some of the others where the environment was a little bit alien to me. I don't know if that's something that comes into your consideration when you're at the level you're at as well.
So I think for me, I have two favourite competitions. They're both based in the UK. The first one's Loughborough International, because Loughborough's where I pretty much train every day. It's sort of my home track. And then the other one is Anniversary Games, because it's an amazing track. There's normally somebody a sellout or an audience, or it's an absolutely quick track. So I sort of have a rough idea, because the one's in May and one's in June. So it's almost like middle of the season. So it's almost like work out where you are. And then you go from, let's say, if the champs are in Tokyo, then training's going well in June, and then you sort of step off and train hard and then get ready for the next one.
Does having that crowd, is that something you bounce off of as well? When you reference the anniversary games there and having more often than not a full house, is that something that really fuels you?
I think the crowd do help, especially if it's like a home games. I think the World Champs in London, that was an absolutely incredible games because I never had like a home advantage before. And the crowd really do get behind you. And let's say in the 200 metres, they really like spur you on around the bend and the noise just hits me really.
Definitely. Well, I remember watching Sammy Kinghorn win at the World Paras, however many years ago that was. And like you say, the noise really reverberates around that stadium.
Yeah.
Except when I'm there to watch West Ham play. Not quite the same. Turning on then to the success side of your career, of which there's a lot. Like, I could have legitimately used up an entire page of notes to list off all the achievements that you've got so far. But I suppose the standouts would be the Paralympic gold in 2016, seven world championships, world records along the way as well as being the first female track and field athlete to hold gold medals in the Paras, the Worlds, the Europeans and the Commonwealths in the same event. Do you have one that you consider, maybe not so much a favourite, but just a personal highlight or the biggest achievement of all?
I think for me it was the Commonwealth because that was the last one of the Grand Slam and that was in Australia, and I've never really represented Team England, so I think that was possibly the highlight. I think that meant more winning in Rio than in Australia, so I think the Commonwealth meant more than the Rio medal.
Is that essentially because it was, like I say, ticking off that Grand Slam and doing something that very few people have done? How does that, when that happens, how do you deal with the aftermath? I suppose I pick on that in two ways, as in, obviously you must be really, really proud that you've done it. Yeah. But then going back to that drive again, what keeps you driven to do more and do it again?
I think I just love what I do. I love my training. And I think if you love something, just keep going and if you enjoy it, keep working hard and just keep driving every day.
The person I cite for that is when we spoke to Yona Knight Wisdom, the diver, back on this podcast. It's probably about a year and a half now in terms of time span, but he mentioned Jack Lawher and when he won his gold at Rio, and he said that, or he kind of explained that he'd reached that pinnacle, won that gold medal and thought everything would be great after that, but then got home and it didn't match that level of having hit that heights. So I suppose that's kind of what I'm digging into with a few athletes, is just how do you manage those days when I suppose you've had that adrenaline rush, that absolute high of winning,
yep,
and then taking the next day when it might just be a normal day, and keep striving for more?
I think that's quite hard because obviously in Rio, you're with your team pretty much every day. So let's say you're away home for 3 weeks, so you're sort of like a massive bubble and you see everyone every day. And it sounds silly, but hey, let's go to 3-2, what do you want to do today? And then when you get home, it just suddenly stops. And I think it is hard. But then after the chance, you can look back and say, yes, I've achieved this off, tick this and this off. And it's now to have some time off, some rest. Go enjoy it, spend time with your friends and family. And then after the rest, you can go back refreshed and hit the next winter block and get ready for the year after.
So for Rio, where you won the gold, obviously, and the silver in the relay, did you have that moment afterwards when you were out of that bubble where, I suppose, almost coming a little bit back down to earth and then having to pick it up again? Whether you can fairly describe it as that.
So it's really nice because in Rio, after the night I won, all my family flew out because I haven't seen the family, because obviously you're in the holding camp and you can't really see your family. So you sort of, before, you get a bit nervous, but then after you've won, it was amazing seeing my mum, my dad, my brothers, and that was really nice. And then my mum's like, you've got loads of people watching you last night and really home support, which is really nice to hear. So it is nice to feel like you have the home support, great people watch you, and then the next day you're with your friends and family.
Definitely. And I think I saw on a live video you did with Hannah Cockcroft that you weren't allowed a lap of honour.
Oh, no, that's correct. No, just sort of the night I won. I think me and Veronica was a Brazilian girl, and then Christina Cox, we weren't for like a lap. And then we got stopped halfway. I'm thinking, hang on, like, we've just won a medal. We're not winning anything. I'll have to go on a lap of honour.
Honestly, I heard that and I thought it was scandalous. Like, surely that's...
So I think we got to around the 200 metre mark and it was just like, no, turn around and you have to go back. I'm like, yeah.
hopefully that you get one at some point soon.
Yeah.
Even if it does come in Tokyo, definitely everyone should get that chance of having a lap of honour. Building up to those Rio Games as well, first Paralympics for you, and I suppose you're still relatively young at the time, was it 19, 20?
Yeah.
Did you put much pressure on yourself? Or how do you deal with sort of the pressure that you're putting on yourself, as well as perhaps the pressure from external forces as well?
So I was obviously very nervous because I never dealt, it sounds silly, but I went to like a food hall at Village itself. I didn't know what that was. So for me, I treat every race like a world champs. Because if you think, oh, it's a parent game, you're going to get nervous. Just treat it like a training run. You've done this, you've done the blocks, you've done the same warm up. It's almost like just treat it like a training run. And that's how I sort of momentum went into the race. So luckily we had two chances. So I had the heat, and then the final the next day. I was probably more nervous for the heat, because obviously once if I fall start, once if I get a beat, once if I don't qualify. So I just think you just got to give it 100%. And then when the final came, I knew I had a good time, but then I had some close rivals next to me, and I just think I just got to get out hard and just maintain it and not tense up and just give it everything I've got.
It sounds like to me treating it like a more normal event. Is that something that you really try and get into your mindset regardless of what it's going to be?
Yeah, because I think if you sort of get nervous and if you build up, I was thinking, oh my goodness, it's a Paralympic final, the nerves will creep up on you. You just got to stay calm, stay relaxed, and yeah.
So then going back to that chat with Hannah Cockcroft on YouTube, and I think it was with the relay where you referenced the nerves kicking in at some point during the race. Was that one of those moments where it flipped a little bit the other way, and perhaps that was one of those moments where the nerves just took over a little bit?
I think the nerves for me, because obviously you introduce the crowd sort of claps, and then on the start line it's like you can hear the pin drop. I think that one moment we were in a set blocks, and then someone clapped, and thinking, oh no, like I need to listen to them, like the coming in noise, and then the noise just kept creeping and creeping. I think, right, I'm gonna fall start, I'm not gonna hear it with the gun, just block out the noise. Don't worry about what's going left or right, just look from the start to the finish.
Still got silver, so that's just still a pretty good effort, even though nerves may have played a little bit of a part in that.
Yeah.
With world records and the medals that you've got so far, do you still feel like we haven't seen the best of you yet and there's more to come?
I think for me, I'm still quite young and I take it day by day. Obviously, I would still love to sort of win more titles or break new world records, but I just take it day by day, I think.
But definitely, I think considering what you're 24, for a lot of people, there's probably still so much enjoyment to see where you can still go from here.
Yeah, I think I'm excited to see what will happen, or let's say for Tokyo and then after that Paris and then LA. I'd love to see where I go, and yeah, I'd just like to continue as long as possible.
This podcast is a member of The Bear, internet radio and podcast network. Find more great podcasts at thebear.live.
Make sure you follow Sportspiel on social media. Search for Sportspiel Pod on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or on LinkedIn. Turning more to the sport in general and what the sport has given you, I'll start that off as the first question. What has athletics or your sport given you as a person?
I think I've made some very good friends along the way. I've been to some amazing places. I never expected to sort of travel all over the world for like the world champs or in, let's say, Australia, or just traveling the world and making friends, brand new friends on the team. So I think that's the two key things that I've been very lucky and honoured to represent my country as well.
And am I right in saying that it was very much 2012 and 2012 that fueled it?
I got inspired by the 2012 Olympic and Paralympic Games. I think I was 15 at the time, watching the likes of Hannah Cockcroft, John Peacock, Jessica Ansell. So they're sort of like my role models.
You're one of many that has said that on this podcast. And it's almost like we treat that summer, Paralympics and Olympics, is a real turning point, I think, for a lot of people trying to get into sport in the first place. Yeah. Is that something that you've very much seen? Is that summer essentially changed the narrative for a lot of things, particularly Paralympic sport?
Yeah, of course. Ever since I was younger, I've always loved playing sport. Like, I loved playing sport and growing up in school. And I think that London 2012 really inspired me. And I'm sure it inspired a lot of other people too. But I think that was for, well, look at them. If they train hard, look what they can achieve. And I'd love to do sort of the same the way they did.
And with regards to the sporting side as well, and growing up with CP.
Yeah.
How has sport helped you with that? Because think back to when I spoke to Libby Breen, who you obviously know very, very well.
Yeah.
And she talked about how much stronger just doing sport had made her. Is that a very similar story with you, where, you know, without sport, it could have been very different?
Yeah, 100%. I would never imagine representing my country. I would never imagine sort of just racing all over the world.
I think this is another very, very deep question, but something I picked out from when I spoke to Phil Camps, who's was a deaf footballer, he had to retire very early, but he almost treated football as like the making of him, and that, you know, outside of football, whether it was just school, felt a little bit like the odd one out compared to everyone else because he was deaf. Is it maybe a little bit of a similar story with you, that was almost the making of you, is the sporting side of things? And I don't know whether it was ever something where you felt a little bit like the odd one out in other settings.
I think so. Like, I did sort of did struggle at school in terms of like work and academics. I struggle with school and stuff. So, like I said, I always loved playing sport, and I think sport has helped me along the way. Like, I would never imagine doing the stuff what I did, or traveling the world, like I said earlier. And I think athletics has changed my life a bit.
Were there any other sports that you were taking part in as well before you fully committed?
I started athletics, I used to horse ride. So I loved horse riding. I went to Brooksby Agriculture College course to study equine and animal care, because I love animals and I love riding. But unfortunately, when the athletics started, I had to sort of give up horse riding, but I do miss it. I absolutely loved it.
So could it have been, I don't know, in an alternative universe somewhere, we could have seen Sophie Hahn in equine sports instead?
I think horse riding was mainly a hobby. I just sort of loved every Saturday going to my local stables and helping out and riding every day and just studying at Brooksby too.
So, and between the two then, what is it about athletics that made it more than a hobby versus the horse side of things?
I think if you have a great coach and you sort of train hard, and I feel like you can achieve anything. For me, I never imagined at 16 going to the world champs, representing the country and becoming a world champion. That was crazy. But it would just show you put the hard work in, and if you enjoy it and you give 100%, you never know where it will take you.
I think that's a large part of it as well, when you say, like, you can see the personal reward to the work that you're putting in. How important is that dynamic between you and the coach then as well, that you've just touched on?
I think it's a massively important opportunity, coach. If you have a great coach, if you have a great setup, like your friends, your family, you have like a support team around you, I think that massively helps. If you have a good S&C coach and you work together, work hard, the achievements will happen.
Here's a big question then, which is one I like to chuck in every now and again.
Yeah.
What do you think has been the biggest challenge in sport for you so far?
I think for me, there will be a day where I will get beaten, and I think that was the biggest sort of challenge. So if I do get beaten, then like it will make me work hard and sort of make me run faster, if that makes sense.
Is it, I don't want to call it a fear because it's not, but that lingering thought in the back of your head of when that day might come, if that makes sense?
I think, like, because obviously every sort of the Olympic and Paralympic Games, people do step up. It's every 4 years. People do sort of, let's say, three further, run faster. And I've just got to make sure I train even harder. So like if the gap's this close, I might want to make sure the gap increases bit by bit.
Do you feel like it's getting to that stage where competition might be getting tougher and you might feel you have to be working harder than ever?
Some of my rivals are very, like, they're training really hard. They're competing really well. So I think it's about three girls that are quite close. And I think it's great for the sport. And I think we just need to sort of challenge each other and Yeah.
Is that something you'd really thrive off of as well, is having almost those rivalries where you can, you know, it's pushing each other every step of the way when you see how each other are doing?
I think it does help, because I think the couple of rivals that on and off the track, like off the track, we're good friends, and then on the track, obviously, we're rivals. So I think we respect one another. So I think that's really important.
And on that important note as well, this is something I've always not so much preached, but have mentioned every now and again. And this is mainly because of sort of the social media side of things, and that it's so easy to see everyone's successes. But not so easy to see everyone's failures. But often behind every success is a failure or a difficulty anyway. I suppose just being more open about those things, because everyone can maybe convince themselves that it's very rosy at top, but there's actually a lot of hard work that goes into it.
Okay, so I think for me, I'm sort of like, I don't really sort of post my training schedule like what I do, because I like to sort of keep everything close, so keep everything sort of like, I don't say, oh, I've put lips to PB. For me, I'm quite not a private person, but I don't really like to sort of announce, well, I've got a new PB in the gym. I sort of like to sort of keep my training, just keep working hard behind the scenes, and then get on the start line, and I know all the works that have been done.
And that's quite interesting as well, because I often taking social media, for example, and some people love to use it like all the time, whether it's through competition and because they like, I don't know, whether they use it as a distraction sort of thing, but others are completely the opposite and want to shut it off completely so that they can focus. Is that very much sort of where you're drawing the line sort of thing? Is that you like to keep things more to yourself sometimes?
Say like if it's, let's say, anniversary games, or I will sort of like, I'm excited to compete at this event or this event. But in terms of my training, I sort of like just keep working hard, and obviously to sort of keep friends and family like messing and stuff, but sort of like to work hard like on the track, and then obviously start on the start line and just race, really.
Definitely. Moving on then to sort of my next topic, if you like, and it's more about women in sport, because it's something that we push a lot on this podcast, because we feel it's important too. And like I said, we talked about the pandemic and lockdown a lot at the moment, and one of those big questions is the impact on women's sport in general with restrictions and all that sort of thing. For you, considering we've also had International Women's Day recently as well, how, from your perspective, just how much, where is the women's sport landscape to you at the moment, from your perspective? I suppose, how much more do we need to do?
I think it does help having International Women's Day. I think for me, I have lots of role models, like let's say Jessica Nesbitt or Serena Williams, are like big role models, and I think it does help having a role model.
On that note then, does it feel a little bit weird being a role model to others yourself?
I do just find it quite strange. I hope I can inspire people, and then sort of I'm very honored to be a role model, and if people look up to me, that's fantastic, and I just sort of keep working hard and just keep, if you do something, just give it 100%.
And having those people that you've mentioned, like Jessica Ennis-Hill, as your role models, What kind of an impact did that have on you? Because I suppose there's always the argument that's why it's so important, because if you're, you know, a 10-year-old girl now, hypothetically, and you see someone like yourself, or in your position, someone like Jessica Ennis-Hill, doing what they do, that can really make you believe that it's possible for yourself at the same time?
I think for me, I got inspired by the London 2012 Olympic Games. I think you just like work hard in silence and let success make all the noise. Like you said, if you give 100% and then if you enjoy something, keep going, and you never know where it will take you, really.
Before those games, did you have a role model as such?
I think Jessica has always been sort of my role model. But I think 2012 definitely helped, because it was like a home games, and I feel like Jessica was the poster girl, like everyone sort of heard of her and knew who she was, so I think that helped.
And then putting more of the sport in schools, or maybe the putting the emphasis on activity for kids, because I think that's one of the big, it's great that schools are back at the moment, but I think that was one of the big things that a lot of children in particular were missing out on, was the sporting side of stuff through lockdown and so on. Is that something you think is really important, that we just keep emphasizing, as the activity side of things and the sporting side of things for those who are young?
I think because obviously lockdown was very hard, and it's still hard for everyone, and obviously everyone's still inside, so I think it was important, let's say you go out for a walk every day outside or you get some fresh air. I think that has really helped you, and I think that's really important. Not just being stuck in your house all day, whether you go out for a walk with your mum or your friends or family, and just, yeah, I think it's really important to get some fresh air.
Definitely. Speaking of someone who's been stuck in their house for quite a lot this week. Does Parasport get the coverage it deserves as well?
I think for Rio 2016, Channel 4 did a fantastic job, and I think Channel 4 always support us. And I think for the anniversary games, for example, it's also on BBC Sport, and they show it's a very sort of well-balanced, and I think we do get shown at the anniversary games. And I think for the Commonwealth Games in 2018, that was on BBC Sport, which was absolutely massive because it's all one team. And obviously, the time difference is hard, but I think we did get a fantastic show, a coverage of from the Commonwealth, from BBC.
Did that, because that was talked about a lot of the time, whenever the Commonwealths are on, is having them all at the same time?
Yeah, I think that, because that's massive for us of power, because we're all one team, and that's like, for example, next year it's in Birmingham, which I think would be absolutely incredible, and would be a massive for us, and I'm very excited for that.
Definitely, and it's certainly make a difference as well. And like you say, I think the coverage has just gone to another level since 2012, especially, yeah. And great to see that exposure continuing. Final bit then, and this is more so looking forward, what happens between now for yourself up until Tokyo 2021?
I think for me, training's going really well at the moment. Just keep working hard, take it day by day, and I think the outdoor season is approaching very soon, so I'm very excited for that, and just take it day by day and train hard and see what happens really.
And have you set yourself a target or a goal? I imagine retaining your title is probably up there.
Yeah. I'd love to retain my title in Tokyo and just hopefully win the gold, and then for the Europeans, retain my title for the Europeans too. So fingers crossed.
Definitely, fingers crossed. And I'm sure a lot of people will be backing you to do something very, very similar. Considering the years you've had since that first Paralympic gold medal. The prospects are certainly good, and hopefully the disruption for Tokyo isn't quite as bad as it could be, and that there is, in an ideal world, some sort of fans there, even if it's reduced capacity to something, because I think everyone really deserves it after these last few months. Thank you, Sophie, for taking some time out to chat with us on the podcast. Like I say, you're talking about a lot of different aspects there, and some important messages like what sport means for you, and also how important I think role models can be for a lot of people, particularly when you see them on the telly or read about them and those successes, and it can help inspire a whole lot of other people. So thank you for joining us on the podcast, and we wish you all the very best going forward to Tokyo 2021.
Thank you.
Thank you hugely to Sophie for taking time out to chat with us on the podcast. We wish her all the very best for the season and beyond, and we'll be keeping an eye during the Paralympics, that is for sure. A reminder to all our listeners that you can follow Sportspiel on all of our social media platforms. All of our handles are at SportspielPod, and you can also check out our website, that is sportspielonline.com. As you'll have heard in this episode, we are proud members of The Bear radio station. You can hear us every Monday night at 10 p.m, or you can now hear us on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. if you prefer lunchtime podcast listening, for example. You can find out more information at thebear.live. That is it from us this week, everybody. Take care. March is nearly done. And we'll be back very soon. Bye-bye.